building your brand is just as important as having good content. And if you have good content, but you don't build your brand, you're writing a great book that no one reads.
There are leadership thinkers, and then there are those who shape how leaders think. Today's guest is one of the most influential voices of our time. Someone who has redefined not just how we lead, but how we grow. Dr. Marshall Goldsmith is the number one executive coach in the world, a Thinkers 50 Hall of Fame inductee, and the author of game-changing books. We're here to explore the mindset behind the mastery and how someone who's coached over 100 CEOs, sold millions of books, he still shows up with radical humility, curiosity, and joy.
Many coaches are threatened by this stuff. You know, my advice is grow up. This train has left the station. Whether you like it or not, nobody cares. You get with the plan and realize this is a new world. Or option B, bye-bye. So here's the important point for the listeners on building your brand. And by the way, helping people is not going to be it. You need something much more clear and specific. Credibility must be earned twice. Part of credibility is having great content. Being competent without credibility is like writing a great book. No one reads. Content is part of the challenge. Process is the bigger part. Say you have the best content in the world. If it's boring, nobody's going to listen to you. It's just help others and pay it forward. But there's no expectation they have to do something for you. I help you, but you must help me. No. The expectation is I help you, and then you help another.
First give before we ask, right? What goes on in my mind is how can I help this person, not what I can get from this person. How can I help this person? And then in return, this person would feel like he wants to give back, right? Welcome to Reimagining You, the podcast where we go beyond titles to explore the real stories behind leadership, transformation, and personal branding. I'm your host, Dr. Eli Daher. There are leadership thinkers, and then there are those who shape how leaders think. Today's guest is one of the most influential voices of our time. A pioneer, a coach, a truth teller, someone who has redefined not just how we lead, but how we grow. Dr. Marshall Goldsmith is the number one executive coach in the world, a Thinkers 50 Hall of Fame inductee, and the author of game-changing books like What Got You Here, Won't Get You There, Triggers, Mojo, and The Earned Life. But we're not here to list awards. We're here to explore the mindset behind the mastery and how someone who's coached over 100 CEOs, sold millions of books, created an enduring legacy, still shows up with radical humility, curiosity, and joy. But before I start, I have to say thank you to C.B. Bowman, my dearest friend and business partner, who not only introduced us, but also claimed to be your adopted daughter in one of the episodes.
She is my adopted, my honorary daughter. She's my honorary daughter.
Honorary daughter. Okay. So let's be honest. Every leader needs a sponsor, and I've clearly been lucky with mine, with her being my sponsor. So welcome, Dr. Marshall.
Hello. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Great. Well, now, Marshall, before we get into leadership, legacy, and personal brand, I want to confess something. So every morning at 9 a.m. my time, your voice plays in my head. Not metaphorically, literally, through your Marshall app. Every day, I've got a reminder to listen to your three thoughts.
Oh,
your cadence.
Nice.
That signature smile in your tone, that soft playing music, and it's becoming my daily Marshall moment. Sometimes it feels like coaching and more like a drive by dose of wisdom from a pocket-sized father figure, or older brother, I might say, with a PhD in truth bombs. Just this morning you told me, pay them to leave, don't punish the messenger, and what's your exit strategy? And I truly love those three points because I took them, I reflect throughout the day on those. And I know you like commitment, daily commitment, so I took some points for daily commitments.
Oh,
but
wonderful.
Honestly, yeah. Yeah, and every, you know, and I'm lucky because I'm in Dubai. So we've got a shift on time. So I have the morning and I have the evening, two lessons, two thoughts.
Very good. Yeah, I as you remember, I used to have a home in Dubai. So I always loved going there. And as you recall, I lived in a small building. It was hard to find the Burj Khalifa.
Yes, and you took your 10,000 steps daily, which I had to walk through with that.
Yeah, always walking around the Dubai Mall. It's very easy because it's so big.
Yeah, you'll get your 10,000 easy. Yeah. So, Marshall, I picked up that you have written 46 books, but six of them are bestsellers. What happened to the other 40?
Oh, 46 is a very old number. I'm up closer to 60 now.
Oh.
So most of these were purchased only by my mother, my father, and associated relatives. So, see, I've sold about 4 million books, but those six or seven have sold almost all of the books. The other books are varying degrees of good. You know, they're a lot of them are edited books. Now I'm really focused on being a second author. So at this stage of life, I'm working with other authors to support them. So I've done four books very recently. The most successful one is called How Women Rise. I did that with my friend Sally Helgeson. It's the number one book for women in leadership in the world for the last 5 years. It sold over 400,000 copies. Hugely successful book. And she was the lead author, and I'm a supporter. Then another book I've done is called Becoming Coachable with Scott Osmond and Jacqueline Lane. That book has been great for them. And then I'm the third author on that book. Another book I'm the second author is Ashish Advani. We did a book called Modern Achievement, and he's the head of Junior Achievement. So that book has been really good for him and young people and using it as a guideline for them. And I just finished a book that came out yesterday called Say It Skillfully with Molly Chang. And again, very positive for her. I like the book. It's great ideas. So every one of these books is not going to sell millions of copies. James Patterson is basically the most famous author in America right now, and he does the same thing. He's now supporting other authors. So I'm fine. Ken Blanchard has also done the same thing. So I'm basically following their model and just not only just trying to do things for me, but also how can I help others?
Absolutely wonderful. So Sally, I invited her for the podcast. Hopefully she'll accept and she'll be on the show, the next one. And we'll have plenty of time to talk about the book as well. I remember when we met in Dubai, that was probably a couple of years ago or three years ago. And I told you, I would ask you your advice. Marshall, I want to write a book. And you told me two things. You told me, what's your mission?
Right.
And what's your niche? And I did not have an answer for either. So here I am. This is my second book. First one was Reimagining Leadership. And this one is Reimagining You, which talks about personal branding and the 10 steps. And guess what? The first two steps are a mission and finding your edge. So I'm going to ask you the question. What does a mission mean to you once you reach the summit?
Well, to me, a mission doesn't always have to say the same. So as I've grown older, I've changed in some ways. My mission now is basically I want to help as many people as I can in the time remaining I have on earth. I'm 76 years old, to have a little better life. And so I'm now thinking of not just working with a CEO, which I've done. I'm very proud of that. I've done work with very many and got a lot of recognition, but just every day-to-day people trying to have a little better life. And when I was younger, I would have been the idea of a quote, for example. I'm very big on quotes now. So now the reason is quotes mean so much to me. What do I learn from Peter Drucker? You know, I remember all of his quotes. I spent 10 years, I work with Peter Drucker. I can't remember everything he said. Okay. I can't remember every word in all those books, but I can remember his quotes. So I've really now started writing quotes, much smaller things, and little pieces that go with these quotes. On LinkedIn, for example, on LinkedIn alone, I have 1.58 million followers. Well, that's a lot.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, that's a lot. And so out of 250 million, I'm number 143 in America. So that's a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And the way I think now is this, very different than I thought in the past. Let's imagine that each person who reads one of my LinkedIn posts alone, nothing else, just that very minor thing,
yeah,
has a better minute, one better minute. Well, last year, I had my post read just on LinkedIn 18 million times. That's a lot of minutes.
Of course.
That's a lot of minutes. So rather than saying everything I do has to change the entire world, now as I've gotten older, well, maybe not. But let's imagine this, our podcast together now. Mm-hmm. Let's assume I say something or we talk about something and it helps somebody out there have a little better life. Well, they don't have to change the world.
Yes.
You don't even have to change their entire life, but a little better life. And like you, one thing I'm proud of. See, we talked a couple of years ago and it helped you have a better life.
Absolutely.
That's my mission.
Absolutely. Wonderfully said. Yeah.
If one person tells me, you know, you helped me have a better life, I'm declaring victory that day. So see, you've already helped me declare victory for today.
There you go. Thank you. And I thank you for that. So that's wonderful. And I think the takeaway is really the missions can change as you progress in your life. But stay focused and stay committed through the power of daily commitment. As you say, find your mojo or inspired by your mojo and daily change of commitment to change, right?
Well, I think very important comment you just made is about daily commitment. As you know, I measure every day what I do. And the reality is if you don't keep on top of it, it just disappears. We live in a very busy world, and especially long-term things don't happen. How many people dream of writing books and never get them done? Almost all. Why? Well, it's hard. It's work. It's day. It's not some instant experience. It's day-to-day work. And the daily question process, which, you know, we've discussed, it's a wonderful idea. Just get a spreadsheet, write down a series of questions to represent what's most important in your life. Friends, family, direct reports, whatever. And every day fill out a number. And if you've been doing this, it is hard to do. The average person quits in 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to look in the mirror every day. It's easy to talk about in theory. And I've had people ask me, do I have a coach? I've had people talk to me almost every day to try to help me. Why? My name is Marshall. I'm too cowardly and undisciplined to do all the stuff I teach. I need help. And it's okay. We all need help.
Yeah.
You know anybody that does not need help? I need help. Look at the people I coach. These are the most successful people in the world. They need help.
Yes. And you told us three things when we coach, right? Humility, courage, and discipline, right?
Right. It takes humility to look in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
It takes humility. And you know what I've learned? I, as a coach, cannot help perfect people get better. So if someone is perfect, they certainly don't need me. So you have to have humility to improve. You have to have courage because it's not easy. And then you have the hard part, though, is you have to have discipline. You don't get better because you listen to a motivational speech or you go to a program or you talk to a coach. You actually have to work. Now, I may have been of some help to you when we had that conversation, but I didn't write the books for you. You had to do that yourself.
Yeah,
that can't come from me. That's got to come from inside you.
Yeah,
and that is hard work, as you know. They didn't write themselves.
Mm-hmm. But your words were words of wisdom to me, and then they helped me. They helped me find my mission and find my edge. And the next question really is about the edge, right? So when you talk in the earned life and success versus comfort.
Right.
You said comfort is the enemy of growth. And how do you actually find your edge and keep your edge?
Well, that's why I think every day we need to challenge ourselves. And there's a story in that book I'll share with the group that really was useful for me. My mentor is Dr. Paul Hersey. And, you know, I met him. I was a very young guy, 27, and he was a very important person. And I met him, and he was kind enough to let me go to one of his classes for free. And I said, wow. And I saw this guy. He's fantastic. I said, I want to be him when I grow up. Well, I said, look, I'll serve the coffee, sit in the back of the room. I'll do anything. I just want to learn to be you. So I practiced. And one day he got double booked. He said, can you do what I do? I said, I don't know. He said, I'll pay you $1,000 for one day. I was making $15,000 for 1 year. I said, yes, sir. And I ended up being very successful. And that's how I got into this business. And then years later, back to your story, he called me up and he said, I have feedback for you. So I'm a little worried, you know, and he calls me in and he says, you know, your customers really love you.
Okay. Nice. Nice feedback.
Said, and you're making lots of money. Well, okay. It all sounds really good. And, you know, you enjoy what you do. I'm going, okay, where's the problem here? And he said, the problem is you're not becoming who you could be. Mm-hmm. You're repeating the same day over and over again. You're very comfortable. You're making money. You're enjoying yourself. And you're not growing. You're not writing. You're not thinking. You are not becoming the person you could become. He was exactly right. Well, there was nothing wrong with what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I was doing well. And he said, look, you're going to have a good life. You want to do that, it's fine. But you will not be the person you could be. And he was right. So to me, that's the challenge, is look in the mirror and say, who's the person I want to become?
Yeah.
And if you say, that's fine, I love it the way it is, fine, leave it alone. But you're not going to grow much.
You know, for our viewers and audience, most of those are professionals. They're stuck in a comfort trap, right? They are hostage of a business card, a name, title, nice logo of a company that opens doors. Yes. Comes with a good salary, good, you know, perks, flying places, and so forth. The issue is when they leave this company, they become a PIP. You know what's a PIP, Marshall?
No.
It's previously important person.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't earn them anymore the front seat in a conference. They won't participate in panels because they won't open doors anymore because they lost that business card.
Right.
So what we try to do is really guide them through these kind of podcasts, episodes, through your wisdom, through your tips and tricks and ideas. How would they, you know, think about their mission, start developing their unique value? Because everybody has a value to give, right? Everybody contributes. They contribute within the confinement of their company, but they don't show it. They don't claim the land. I'm sure they have a niche or two that they could be a thought leader there, and they could help develop and grow. You've created a wonderful personal brand. Everybody knows Marshall Goldsmith. I'm working on this. Nobody knows yet Eli Daher, but I'm working on it through the learnings, through the teaching. So what would you say to the audience and the viewers around that kind of subject?
Well, this is very, very important. So I think what you're doing is helping people with branding is incredibly important. Let me explain why. In my book, The Earned Life, one part is called credibility must be earned twice. Okay. So let's just take our time and go through this. Everyone listening, this is a very important point. Credibility must be earned twice. Part of credibility is having great content, being competent, being good at what you do, very important. The other part of credibility, though, is being recognized for being good at what you do. A very different thing. It is very different. Now, you mentioned books. How many titles are on Amazon.com this year? Answer, 32.8 million. 32.8 million. In 1 year, how many do you have to sell to be in the top half of all books sold? And the answer is 2.
Oh, wow.
Half of those books sold 0 to 1 copy last year. And it does not mean they are bad books. I'm sure some of them are better than any book I ever wrote. I am not that arrogant to believe everything I ever wrote is better than 16 million books. Statistically, some of these books have to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody bought them. So,
wow.
Being competent without credibility is like writing a great book. No one reads. Now, you wrote a great book. Nice. No one read the book. So the key is, in life, do you want people to read your book or not? Well, you know, and by the way, most people in the coaching field are really good people, high integrity. They do good work, and they are terrible at marketing and building a brand. Terrible.
Absolutely. I see that.
That's why coaches make so little money. Most coaches make very little money. They're terrible at building a brand. Now, here's what I teach the coaches. So I want everyone listening right now to us to focus. Three questions. Question one, if you became more influential, if you became more recognized, would the world be worse off or better off? Okay. Ponder that question. Would the world be worse off or better off? Well, the huge majority of coaches say better off.
Of course, yeah. Hopefully, yeah.
Well, that's good. Number two, does trying to become more personally influential and powerful, does that make you uncomfortable? Does it make you uncomfortable? Mm. Almost all the coaches say, yes, it makes me uncomfortable. So then I ask the coaches a very tough question. Grow up and make a decision. What's important to you in life? Making a positive difference in the world or being comfortable? Now, if you want to be comfortable, be comfortable. It's okay. But don't sit there and brag about how modest you are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you don't have the guts to try to be more influential, accept what you got. That's life.
Wow. So, great. So three questions.
Very helpful for coaches because very few of them actually deal with this. I wrote a recent article on LinkedIn for coaches about the old voices we have in our heads. And the old voices sound like this. Don't strive. Don't be too ambitious. No, very bad. Very bad. Don't do that. Never talk about money. No, no, no. Very, very bad. Don't talk about money. Don't be ambitious. Don't think about yourself. All very bad. Where did those voices come from? They came from old upper-class Brits that ruled the world, and they kept this as a great message to everyone. You know why? They didn't have to be ambitious. You know why they didn't have to be ambitious? They were born royalty.
Mm.
They didn't have to strive. You know why? Everything was given to them.
True.
They didn't have to talk about money because they were rich. These are great messages to keep down poor people. And by the way, those messages are very deep and they cut across the world. Very deep messages, typically used by rich people to keep down the poor. So what happens with these messages is, you see, you're not going to strive. If you do, the top people look down on you, but even the bottom people look down on you.
Yeah.
So they created an environment where you get dumped on from the top or the bottom. So guess what? They won. And by the way, for hundreds of years, that worked out pretty well for them.
Yeah. Well, these are very powerful three questions. I love those. I love those. Very good. And you talk about influence, right? So let's talk a bit more about influence, because I think in what got you here won't get you there. Rule number one of influence, you talked about it, right? And so many leaders expect respect because of their past roles. But I think you said you can't coach people who do not want to change, right? So what is the most common trap of entitled influence you've seen, for example?
Well, what happens is I call it the superstition trap. And here's the way it sounds. I behave this way. I am successful. Therefore, I must be successful because I behave this way. No, that is wrong. It is wrong on two dimensions. One, you behave this way, you are successful. You are probably successful because you did many things right. And you're also probably successful in spite of doing some things that are very stupid. And I've never met anyone who's so wonderful they have nothing on the in spite of list. The second problem in the new world is this. I did this in the past, I am successful. If I do it in the future, I will continue to be successful. Wrong again. The future is not the past.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that made you successful in the past. That is nice.
Yes.
That was then. This is called now. This is now.
So
by the way, one of my best-selling books is called The Leader of the Future. I wrote it years ago. It's a book that sold about 500,000 copies. I was the editor with Francis Hesselbein, Richard Beckard, and Peter Drucker. Now, on that book, I was by far the, you know, least important person on the book, but still my name was on the book, so I was one of them. One of the breakthrough articles in the book, you know, it talked about new technology. It described a breakthrough new technology. You know what the name of it was? Emails. Well, it was a good book.
Yeah,
that was
at the time.
It was right. Emails became a breakthrough technology.
Absolutely.
But you read the book today, it's humorous, right?
Yes, of course.
What got you here won't get you there. That book was a very good book in 1997.
Yeah.
I'm proud of that book. But you know what? In 2025, that book is a joke.
Well, I still have some good moral takeaways from it. I mean, I read it recently again, and I still picked up a few things from it, right?
Yeah.
So
they have the email chapter, maybe not.
Well, yeah, probably you remove that, but I mean the rest. But you talked about, you know, that, and I use it. I mean, I'm 62 years young, right? And I had to unlearn and relearn the hard way. Because I came in from a corporate world, 27 years in one company. I learned it. This is the systematic way of doing business. And I started dealing with different cultures, different generations in the workplace. And I was humbled because, you know, every time I say, well, this is how it is done, son or daughter or colleague or friend, they shy away. Either they confront me with these things and they come up with new ideas. And it's for me to really unlearn what I had the concepts that once and upon a time it worked. Now there might be better ways. So I think, thank you for that. And I put this all the time in every conference, every speaking engagement. I always talk about the unlearn to relearn, which I think is very powerful for us. I want to just ask you two questions around coaching, because you have coached a lot of leaders across the world in various cultures. Mm-hmm. So how does culture play in coaching? Because everybody has different values, different approaches, different systems. What would be our advice to coach in multiculture?
Very little problems working around the world. It actually depends on who you work with. The cultural differences are largely a function of who are you coaching. Now, let me talk about this from a variety of perspectives. One, the coaching process I developed is called stakeholder-centered coaching. In stakeholder-centered coaching, you interview people around the client. You interview people they want you to interview, as approved by the CEO and the person or the board. You don't tell them who the right people are. They tell you. You ask them questions. You get input. They pick what they want to improve, not you. See, if I told them what they had to improve, I would have to be an expert on their culture. I don't. I don't tell them what to improve. I don't tell them what's important in their culture. They tell me. Mm-hmm. I'm there to help them achieve goals they have determined, not I have determined, as judged by people they have determined, not I have determined. That is why my coaching process works around the world. So one variable is when you coach people in the way I coach people, I'm a facilitator. I don't have to be an expert on the culture. By the way, I'm not an expert on the company. They'd send me the annual reports. I usually throw them away. I don't even read them. I'm not an expert on the company. I can't be an expert on, I've coached the CEO of the World Bank, Walmart, ministers in Saudi Arabia, leaders in UAE, India. I can't be an expert on every, not only not I'm an expert on the culture, I can't even be an expert on the company. I can't know that much, nor do I have to know that much. They don't hire me to be an expert on the company, and they don't hire me to be an expert on the culture. They hire me to help them. They tell me what's important in their company. They tell me what's important in their culture. I don't tell them. I'm a facilitator. Well, if you're a facilitator, you can work in any culture. That's one. Two, in terms of cultural differences, much less than they used to be. Cultural differences are huge at the bottom. The higher up you go, less and less and less. I want to share something with you. A billionaire in France and a billionaire in Dubai and a billionaire in India and a billionaire in Rio and a billionaire in New York City. You know what country they live in? They live in billionaire land. That's where they live. And you know who they've got a lot in common with? Each other. You know they have very little in common with? Normal human beings.
Yeah, like me.
They have very little in common with normal humans, right?
Yeah, true.
And so the cultural difference is interesting, but that pales in significance to other things. And in the new world, everyone I coach speaks English. They all speak English. They've been Western educated in most cases. They speak English. They're rich. Mm-hmm. You know who my clients culturally have a lot in common with? My other clients.
Yes.
They have a lot in common with each other.
Yes. Very good point. Very good point.
You think the guy that's worth $14 billion in Nashville running a healthcare concern has a whole lot in common with some guy out in a small farm? Not much.
Yes. Very well. Very well said. I'm going to shift to content because, we live in the hybrid economy. So in my era, knowledge was power. We amassed knowledge. We learned from university all the way through our working life. And we basically sell knowledge in companies. Well, today we have the attention economy, where content is king. You have the digital area, you have all these aspects that are mixed together with the shift of the knowledge economy to the attention economy, creates a hybrid economy. So people like me or my age, for the viewers and the listeners, they probably live in the same space. They're still probably living in the knowledge economy and they're not able to shift. I see a remarkable shift from your side by adopting your Marshall AI on the phone and few other tools. You're pretty active on LinkedIn, sharing your wisdom there. I think you showed me one great gizmo.
I'm pretty active. I do rank 143 in the world out of 250 million. So I would say pretty active might be a little bit of an understatement there.
Very active.
I did have 18 million people read something I wrote last year. So,
Very good.
You know what my new post on LinkedIn said? I just got ranked number 7 in the world in terms of being a creator on LinkedIn in my field, number 7. And I also said, I'm proud of this because I'm 28 years older than the average of the top 10. I'm 28 years older than the average of the other 9. I'm proud of that.
Of course. And you embraced it very nicely. You wanted to show me something, actually. Your new robot.
Yeah, computer robot. Let me talk about this, all right?
Yeah.
And I'll ask it a question. And, what happens is I'm very proud of this, and it's only going to get better, by the way. It is. I had a breakthrough today about this even. It's going to be so good. I am teaching my AI everything I know. For example, if you ask it, in the past, they answered what I call encyclopedia answer. Interesting, but no color, no human part. I'm now training it to sound like a human. And so I'm training it to answer questions in a way that doesn't sound like a robot. And the response is much more of a human type of response, which I really like. Yeah, I really like it, because what happens is it takes things out of that more stale, computer-like, somewhat boring way and makes it all more interesting and fascinating. So also I'm training my computer, Marshall Goldsmith.ai, to speak in many languages. Now, you heard the Arabic version. It's not perfect, but it's getting better and better.
That was very good, actually.
Yeah, it's
you want to play it back or for our Arabic audience?
Yeah, it's now speaking in many languages. And so what's fun about this is I'm teaching it all I know. Well, I just had a breakthrough today about this. I don't want to go into too much technology, but we came up with a system which really has been a breakthrough in AI. The system is this. In the old days, AI, you ask an AI bot a question, you would get an answer. But the answer is what I call a variable answer, which is a good thing. It studies the world, and it gives you an answer based on what it studies, but it's always a little bit different. So I'm teaching my computer bot to have both variable and fixed answers, and the fixed answer is not always different. For example, if you ask my computer bot, how old are you? Simple question. Well, it says, I was born on March 20th, 1949, but I still feel young on the inside.
With a fun twist, right?
So, and it also provides both text and verbal answers in different languages. So anyone listening, please go to Marshall Goldsmith, my name, .ai, Marshall has two L's, and just ask it a question. And it's all free too. So there's no charge. So it's already been asked about 115,000 questions. And, you know, we haven't even promoted it very much. So that number is going to get up in the millions, you know, very soon.
Wow. That's nice. I'm sure we will put that in the comments after the when we air the podcast.
Yeah,
definitely, and the link.
And it's also just for me great fun to do these things. Why? Yes. I like to try new things, so I'm always coming up with new ideas, trying to come up with new and different thoughts. I'm working with younger authors now. A lot of my life is working with younger authors, and so it's fun. It's fun for me.
So what would be what would you advise our viewers and listeners on trying to shift from the knowledge economy to the attention economy? What is one or two things that they need to start doing?
1949, which makes me currently 74 years old. So it sits there, it now talks in my voice.
Okay. Do you want to try that Arabic thing?
Yeah, let me see if I can make it work in Arabic. It's fun.
Yeah.
it's a lot of fun. So for me, this is just a lot of fun. And I ask it questions in multiple languages. Let me see. How can I better delegate? That's a good question. How can I better delegate?
Okay, yeah.
That might be interesting.
And so I can ask 99% of the coaches, of the leaders ask. How can I better delegate?
I want to delegate better. So I can ask it questions, and now it's going to be able to, and it's getting better and better, it's going to be able to provide answers in, I think right now it's up to 14 or 15 different languages. For example, So you get the...
And it's no mistake. It's very clear, very crisp, and
yeah, let me ask you a question.
And very articulate.
Do I have an accent or how much accent?
It is slightly accent from the Gulf region. I'm Lebanese originally, right? So it's not Lebanese. It's more of a bean standard Arabic, which is the common Arabic that everybody understands, with a slight accent towards the Gulf. But it's perfectly okay, you know. I mean, you don't look like one, but but still understandable.
Well, speaking of that, the next generation is going to be video.
Oh, with the, you know,
you're going to see my face, same green T-shirt, beard, everything, talking.
Talking, yeah, with the avatar, your avatar.
And it's not going to look like an avatar.
Oh, okay.
It's going to look just like you. And it's going to speak 40, many languages.
Wow.
Welcome to the new world.
The new world, exactly.
One other thing about this, it's mind-blowing. My goal was it would answer about 80% of the questions you ask me about 80% of the time. It's much better than that now. It can answer any question you ask me better than me anytime. What happens? My daughter, for example, asked it, how is your coaching related to utilitarian philosophy?
Oof.
Not an easy question.
No.
It studies utilitarian philosophy. It studies my coaching. It knows me. It answers it exactly like I would answer it.
Wow.
In 5 seconds in many languages. It's mind-blowing.
Very powerful. Very powerful.
Very powerful stuff.
Very powerful.
And I can't do that. And the one thing I tell coaches, because many coaches are threatened by this stuff. You know, my advice is grow up.
Yeah.
This train has left the station. Whether you like it or not, nobody cares.
Yes.
Option A, you get with the plan. You've talked about this a lot. Option A, you get with the plan and realize this is a new world. Mm-hmm. Or option B, bye-bye.
Yeah. Go retire somewhere.
You go retire. So what I'm proud of is how many other 76-year-olds are in the top 10 influencers in LinkedIn or on all social media, top 10 influencers and have their own AI computer bot?
Yeah.
Not too many.
Well, you're unique. You're unique. Not too many. Absolutely. Well done. Well done.
And you know, and also have fun. I enjoy myself.
Yes.
Now, look, what am I going to do? You know what? I don't have to talk to you today. You know what I could be doing? I could be playing bad golf with a bunch of old men at the country club and eating chicken sandwiches and discussing gallbladder surgery. I don't want to do that.
Sure, at our age, you know, these are kind of the discussions.
Yeah, why do that? Boring, boring, boring.
Yeah, yeah. You kept ahead of the technology or rest of the technology. Well done. So back to my question, what would be an advice or two for our audience of viewers who are stuck still in the knowledge economy, what to do when, you know, to embrace the attention economy and to start shifting?
The first thing is what is. So any amount of time you want to spend whining about, I'm not sure about AI, blah, blah, blah. Look, I'm not naive. I know there's a lot of problems going to happen here, but I'm not going to change those problems. I'm not going to change AI. I'm not going to stop this stuff. So what I tell coaches is, they say, well, what I believe is, it's hard feedback, but nobody cares what you believe. This isn't a vote. There's trillions of dollars being spent on this stuff. Nobody asks for your opinion.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about your opinion. Grow up. This is the new world. Now, option A, you make the best of it. Or option B, sit back and whine. Well, let's make the best. I'm making the best of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making the best of it. I'm always looking at how I can do better, new ways to communicate, you know, AI.
Yeah.
It's fun. But the thing is, I can't compete with this. By the way, intellectual property, let it go. Let it go. I give everything away.
Yes, you did.
Why do I give it away? I'm not hoarding it, right? Yeah.
You did.
What are you supposed to do? You have something that can help people, but you're not going to tell them unless they pay you? That's not good.
Mm-hmm. First give before we ask, right? Yeah. I learned this from one of the previous guests, Adrian Gostick, which you also had the pleasure to work with him as well on some of his books, I guess, or Chester.
Yeah, great friends. They're both members of my 100 coach group.
Yes, absolutely. So I asked him the question on the network. When you go and network, typically in a professional setting, you go to a conference, you meet people, you take your business card and you give it to a person. And this person reads the business card and start asking you questions.
Sure.
What do you do? How long you've been here? And all what's going in his or her mind is, how can I benefit from this person?
Right.
Right? And if they don't see a link to benefit or whatever, they just move away and go to the other person, and then they walk either the room or the conference. Well, Adrian was remarkable in this point. He says, well, the question, I flipped the question. When I ask the question to the person that I've just met, what goes on in my mind is, how can I help this person?
Right.
Not what I can get from this person. How can I help this person? And then in return, this person would feel like he wants to give back, right? So that he changed the idea of networking here for me. So what is your thought on networking?
Well, let me tell you, I learned this as a very, very young guy. When I was a kid, I was 17, 18 years old, and I was brought up in a very small neighborhood, very poor. So in our county, my school was probably the poorest school in the county. We came in, I'm from Kentucky, next to last place in educational achievement. We had an outhouse the first 4 years I was in school. So I was not brought up in Harvard prep.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bread drive called the March of Dimes bread drive to raise money for a charity. And I was in charge of our high school. So we should have come in last place, but we came in first place. So what happened is, the bread company gives you the bread. You're supposed to knock on the door and say, I'm looking to raise money for charity. If you donate money, I will give you the bread. You know what I told my team? No. You knock on the door and you give them the bread. If they're too poor, if they're too poor to make a donation, they're going to throw the bread away anyway. Give them the bread.
Mm.
Don't demean them by bribing them for bread.
Yeah.
Give them the bread, and then you give them a bread and say, the nice bread company has donated the bread. If you would like to make a donation, please, we would be happy for you to do this. Our high school raised more money than every other high school. You know why? I ignored the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And gave people the bread.
You gave first, right?
Simple model of life. Give them the bread.
Nice. I'm going to use that. Give them first the bread.
And then if they want to donate, great. And if they don't want to donate, it's okay too.
Yeah.
It's okay. But maybe later they would donate. Maybe they remember. My uncle was a medical doctor, very proud, and people would come in if they needed help back in a small town. They had no money. He said, it's okay. If you want to pay me, just give me something. They would give him eggs and food or, you know, whatever. Whatever was fine. When he retired, he made an announcement he was retiring. He got so many gifts that he had to put an ad in the paper to ask people, please, don't give any more gifts. People give him cow. Somebody gave him a cow. I mean, he appreciated the thought, right? But still, I don't need a cow or a pig. It's okay. Well, that's the whole idea, though. The other thing is, I was proud of him. I was very proud. How proud would I have been if he'd made an extra 500,000 bucks? Zero.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked about, you know, a person finding the mission, then their value, their unique value or their niche. Then we talked about, embrace the hybrid economy, start shifting from knowledge to attention economy, and learn, unlearn to relearn, or you know, use and embrace the new technology and be abreast. Grow up. That's a key word. Okay. Then we talked about really that content, create content, consume the content. And now we're going to talk about, once you've done all this, you're going to go out in the open. Sometimes you are invited to a speaking engagement, a panel, and a lot of probably the audience or viewers have stage fright. Now, if you've spoken on stages, boardrooms, videos, AI apps, that really, what grounds your presence and how do you actually, that one thing that matters when you show up in public?
A few guidelines. One, if you, I've never had stage fright. So since I was a kid, I've never had stage fright. People ask me to get nervous before you speak, to get sick. I don't get nervous at all. I never got nervous. I just enjoy it, right? I don't have stage fright talking to you. I enjoy myself, right? So number one, I don't ever have stage fright. So for me, it's never been an issue. Number two, though, practice. If you do have stage fright, they have things called, what is that speaking place where you learn how to speak? They practice over and over again. I forgot the name of it.
Toastmaster.
A great idea. Toastmaster. Yeah. Go to Toastmaster. Practice over and over and over. And once you start practicing, you're not afraid anymore. So that's fixable, number one. Number two, guideline for the speaker. Smile. Most of these people look like they're boring. Yeah. They look boring. They sound boring. Smile. Enjoy yourself up there. Look, let me give you a couple examples. Right. My first speaking job from Dr. Hersey was the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company in New York, and he was supposed to be there. They were so angry when I showed up because I wasn't him. I got ranked first place of all speakers. Why? I was funny. I told jokes, stories. They love me. The other speakers were boring, boring. PowerPoint slides, boring. They said, send me back. I came in first place. Send him again. They love me. I had a good time. Yeah. I mean, the other time, I never get scared. One time I thought I might get scared. I was in Russia, 50,000 people I'm speaking in front of in a football stadium in Russia. And only about 20% spoke English. I thought, oh, man, even for me, this is kind of And now Arnold Schwarzenegger was also there. So a few of them might have wanted to hurt Arnold. I don't know. But anyway, so I'm giving this talk. I thought, what am I going to do? You know what I did? I had one goal, only one goal. You know, I said, I'm going to have a good time. I said, I don't care what happens out there. If the sound system works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. They love me. They love me. They don't love me. They don't love me. One person is going to have a good time today. That would be me. I'm going to get up there and have fun, and whatever's going to happen is going to happen. That's exactly what I did, and the people love me. I got higher rankings than Arnold Schwarzenegger. They love me. Well, I'm funny. I was having a good time. And you know what the most common feedback I got was? This guy loves what he does. This guy loves what he does. Well, look. Get up there and communicate. You love what you do. Smile.
Yes.
Don't sit there. Well, now I'm going to teach you how to be a better leader. Better leaders do the following five things.
Yeah.
Boring.
Absolutely. So love what you do and be confident and then just relax, be authentic and, you know, have enjoy fun in the making, right? Enjoy yourself. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Life is too short.
You're great in storytelling. I've been, you know, since I took my certification, I don't know how many years back, I was watching videos with you and your partners, all stories and the power of storytelling, right? And I think you're the master of storytelling and you share a lot. I mean, we've witnessed that in this podcast, right? So,
I mean, what happens is if all you're going to do is read content, what do they need you to speak for anyway?
Yeah.
Give them a book.
Give them a book. Yes.
Read the book.
Yeah.
All right. Why do they need to listen to you talk if all you're doing is reading
the book?
If they
can read it. Absolutely. Yeah.
Assuming they can read, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just read the book.
Yeah.
Or if all you're going to do is talk, you know. And by the way, the problem is, if you ever want to sell books, you ever read a book where all they have is this content point? You can't do it. Your mind blanks out.
Yeah.
Your mind blanks out.
Won't have the attention span.
But no, yeah, it's not interesting.
True.
So
true.
You're making a very good point here for the listeners. A very, very important point. We get lost in content and we forget about the process.
Mm.
Content is part of the challenge. Process is a bigger part. Say you have the best content in the world. If it's boring, nobody's going to listen to you. You get up there. Audience is gone. The other thing I do as a speaker is I encourage participation.
Yeah.
Feed forward. Everybody talks. They walk around. They enjoy themselves. I just sit there and lecture. I involve the audience. Now you say, how can I do that? I did it with 50,000 people in Moscow. 50,000. I get up and I say, we're going to practice feed forward. You're going to pick one thing you want to do better, and you're going to talk to as many people as you can in 4 minutes. You're going to say, my name is, I want to get better at, give me ideas. No feedback about the past, ideas for the future.
Yeah.
You can't judge ideas. Say thank you. I did this in front of 50,000 people. they're all standing up talking to each other. Only 20% even spoke English. It didn't matter. They didn't have to speak English to do the exercise. They could do it in Russian. They loved it.
Yeah. And feed forward, I want to open a bracket on this because a lot of our audience and listeners and viewers, they don't know what feed forward is, because you have invented this and you have changed the game, right? So just give us a view of what is feed forward.
Yeah, feed
as
forward,
opposed to feed backward.
Yeah, of all the things I've invented, feed forward is one of the top. I mean, it's huge. So feed forward has been used by millions of people around the world. Now, how does it work? Let's pretend you're my client. Mm-hmm. Now, let's pretend you're the CEO. Now, if you are the CEO, I involve the board. So the board is going to have to approve everything I do. I don't want to work with you and the board doesn't like it. No, the board has got to approve it. So I work with you. You tell me who your stakeholders are. I interview every stakeholder. I give you feedback. Now, people have said I'm not against feedback. Feedback is great for letting you know where you are. It's not great for getting to the next place. Feedback has a word back. Mm. Feed forward is the word forward. It's not the same. Well, you get feedback and you pick what you want to improve and the board agrees. Then you don't ask for more feedback. Everything else is feed forward. You talk to every stakeholder and you say, you know, Ms. Stakeholder, I went to this process and I got this feedback. I don't know who said what. Many people helped me. Thank you. I'm so happy. Here's what I feel good about. You talk about the positive. Then you say, here's what I would like to improve. You pick something to do better. Mm. You don't have to pick 50 things. Pick one thing. It's good. Pick anything, right? Then you say, for example, I want to be a better listener. Then you don't ask for feedback. You say, I'm not going to ask for feedback about the past. I only want ideas for the future. You see, I can't change the past anyway. I can change the future. Give me ideas. Help me be a better listener. It's much more positive. Then they're helpful. They're being positive. They're not critiquing you. You don't get defensive. It's a much, much better way. And then we do this over and over and over again. I've done it for years. You get better, I get paid.
Yeah. No, it's very powerful. And I use it every time I coach somebody. Feed forward is a very powerful.
I'm going to teach you personal coaching for you. Now, you've done this about 4 times in our discussion. You probably never hear yourself. I'm going to teach you something from my book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Are you ready?
Yes, go ahead.
I said something you agreed with just now. What was the first word out of your mouth? I said something you agreed with. What was the first word you said? Do you know? Let me help you. You know what it was? No. You said, no, that is very powerful. Now, why did you say no? Hmm. You've done this about 4 or 5 times in our conversation. The most common phrase uttered by smart people when people tell us something that we agree with is, no, I agree with you. No, I think that's a powerful idea. You know why we say no? We are so geared to prove how smart we are that no means no, I already knew and agreed with that. It's a very interesting habit of smart people. You didn't know you were going to get coaching.
No, but it's very good. I mean, I take it as a good feed forward for me, but also a compliment because you called me you labeled me as a smart person.
Yeah, so I call it smart man disease.
Smart man disease. Okay, well, I never thought of that. Thank you, Marshall. I will play back the video to see which part I said that.
Now, by the way, how many times, two words, how many times do you start a sentence with either no or but? My guess is it will be maybe 8.
Yeah. Thank you for the coaching. There you go. And it came up free as well. So thank you.
And everyone listening can learn from it as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's going to go to thousands of people.
Yeah.
Couple more questions before we round up this call. You have created the Marshall Goldsmith 100. It started as MG20, I think, and then it expanded to 100. I would like you to shed some light on that because this is a wonderful initiative that you have created.
Yeah, it has
became
been
a model.
My goal was I wanted to basically adopt 15 people and teach them all I know for free. And the only price is when they got old, they had to do the same thing. My idea was I'll put a little ad on LinkedIn and then 100 people might apply. And then I will adopt 15. They'll be young, like I was with my Paul Hersey story. They would be me and I would be like Paul. And I would teach them what I know, like he taught me. And then they go do it on their own. So I thought, what a nice idea. So I put an ad in LinkedIn. I don't know what I was thinking. Not smart. Mm-hmm. You know how many people applied to be adopted? 18,000 people applied to be adopted.
I was one of them.
18,000. Well, I can't adopt 18,000 people, right? The problem was just how many applied was who applied. Mm. The president of World Bank applies. He wants to be in the group. You know, CEO of the year in the United States. I had 4 people, CEO of the year in the United States. They want to be in the group. I can't reject these people. What am I supposed to do? Send a note to the head of the World Bank and say, sorry, you're out? No, you can't reject them. So we ended up with all these great people. And the guideline is pretty simple. Now we have 400 people. Mm. So the goal is just help others and pay it forward. So the goal is anyone can ask you for an idea. You try to help them. You don't charge them any money.
Yeah.
And then, but there's no expectation they have to do something for you. It's mm-hmm. not, you know, I help you, but you must help me. No. The expectation is I help you and then you help another.
Very nice mission. Very nice. The group is a great model for community of coaches,
and
right?
You mentioned my friend CB, my honorary daughter. So, you know, she's a wonderful person. So she's a member of our group. I think she's found it very enjoyable.
Yes, she talks a lot about the group and the exchanges as well. So that's how I pick up all the different news on that group. Final question, a word of wisdom to our viewers and audience around their personal brand, particularly those professionals who really are in a trap. What would you give them as a word of advice or wisdom?
I'm going to answer 2 questions. The first question is the professional side, and then the second is the personal side. So I'll do with both. First, on the professional side, you need to do 3 things. If you want to have a brand, you need to have a personal mission. Now, my mission years ago, very simple. I said, my goal is helping successful leaders achieve positive long-term change in their behavior. Today, that sounds, so what's the big deal? Nobody else thought of that mission. Coaching was about fixing losers, not helping winners. I invented that concept, basically. If you do a Google search today, in quotes, helping successful leaders, those 3 words, in quotes, of the first 500 references, how many are me? Answer
499.
Yeah, 450. It's all me. It's all me, right? Who's the most famous executive coach in the world? Me. You think that's an accident? No, I worked on it. So here's the important point for the listeners on building your brand. One, you need a clear brand identity. And by the way, helping people is not going to be it. It's too vague. Mm. You need something much more clear and specific. You need a clear brand identity, and you need to have three things. One, it needs to be connected to your higher mission. Two, you need to do work you enjoy. And three, you need to be able to achieve. If you can do that, you win. Final point, building your brand is just as important as having good content. And if you have good content, but you don't build your brand, you're writing a great book that no one reads. No one's reading your book. Now, the second point, though, in a human dimension is I want everyone listening to breathe. Just breathe. Imagine you're 95 years old. You're just getting ready to die. But right before you take that last breath, you're given a great gift, the ability to go back in time and talk to the person listening to me right now. So what advice would that old person who knows what mattered in life and didn't and what was important and what wasn't, what advice that wise old person have for the you that's listening to me right now? Okay. Whatever you're thinking now, do that. In terms of performance appraisal, that's what matters. That old person says you did the right thing, you did. The old person says you made a mistake, you did. You don't have to impress anybody else. So a friend of mine interviewed old folks who were dying, got to ask the question, what advice would you have? Personal side, three themes. Theme number one, three words. Be happy now. Not next week, not next month, not next year. If you don't love what you're doing, go find something else to do. Be happy now. Number two, friends and family. Don't get so busy climbing the ladder, you forget the people who love you. And then number three, if you have a dream, go for it. Business five says much different. Number one, life is short. Have fun. Enjoy what you're doing. If you enjoy what you're doing, it doesn't feel like work. As I have I been working for the last hour with you? I don't know. You could say it's work. Not really. It seems like fun to me.
Yeah, and the hour just passed by.
Exactly. Have fun. Mm-hmm. Number two, you have to achieve something that's meaningful to you, and then you just go for it. You know, just go for it. Yeah, we regret the risk we failed to take more than the risks that we take and fail. So finally, look, my mission in life, I want everyone listening to think of everything I said. Pick one thing that might help you have a better life. Just do that. Do that.
Well, reflection. That brings us to the end of this really extraordinary conversation, Dr. Marshall. Actually, today was not just an interview. It's a masterclass that you showed us in humility, generosity, and earned leadership, really. I guess you reminded us of the personal brand isn't built on titles or trophies, right? It's built on choices that you make daily to grow, to give, to unlearn, and to serve. So if you're listening right now, wondering how to reimagine your voice, your relevance, and your next chapter, start with one question Marshall asked himself and others. Am I being the person I want to be right now? Because leadership is not a destination, it's a decision. So thank you, Marshall, for showing us what it means to live and lead with purpose. And thank you for our listeners. If this episode sparked something in you, share it with someone you care and take one step towards earn the life that you deserve. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marshall.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Reimagining You. If you enjoyed the episode, follow the show, leave a review, and share it forward. See you next week with a new episode. Keep reimagining you.